Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. You're listening to Renee's Heart to Heart. Welcome back. As you know, if you tuned in last night, we talked a little bit about the movie Bully. And today I had the pleasure of spending quite a little bit of time on the phone with somebody who's very involved in this movie. And if you listened last night, you know that I was a little upset about some of the things that I saw and heard, mostly about the behavior of the adults involved. And we talked about the fact that we don't take things seriously, and a lot of times, like the boy who cried wolf, if your child comes home and says, so-and-so is picking on me, you have a tendency to say, you know, pick back. If it doesn't stop, tell a teacher. Maybe you've even gone to school and said, you know, so-and-so is picking on my kid on the bus. You've done a little bit because you're not taking it really, really seriously. And what the movie taught me yesterday is the fact of bullying's long-term effect is terrible, is awful, and often leads to a child, in this case, many children, taking their own lives. Some very young. It's heart-wrenching to even think about it and to say it out loud, but it is truly happening every day. So, because I've started on this journey, I thought I need to think of something that's going to make a difference. And quite frankly, I don't know what is going to make a difference. The only thing I can say is what I've said from the very beginning, and that is that we as the adults have got to start paying closer attention, and we have to be there more for our children. We have to listen between the lines. We have to hear what isn't being said. We have to be really, really, really good people. And really, really, really be paying attention to what's being shown to us. Now, some of the things I thought about while on the phone with this new friend of mine are, one thing, I'm not sure everybody has a clear picture of a bully. Because if you conjure up a cartoon character, a typical bully on a cartoon, it's usually a rather large, lumbering, doesn't speak real well, but hits real hard, kind of a person. And in truth, that's not always the bully. Sometimes the bully is a beautiful cheerleader. Sometimes the bully is a teacher that everybody else seems to get along really, really well, but doesn't like you for one reason or another. Sometimes it's even very sadly a parent. Sometimes it's an older sibling. The point is they don't always look like a bully. And maybe they're not bullying anybody but you. So you have to understand that if somebody, anybody, is making you feel uncomfortable, unsafe, unworthy, uncared about, they're bullying you. And you need to tell someone, you need to tell anyone that that's happening to you. If there's someone in your life that makes you feel like you're just not as good as you need to be, or not as beautiful as you should be, or not as smart as you would be if you tried harder, and they're really, really driving that home to you on a daily basis, tell them they're hurting you. Speak up and let them know that you're doing the best you can and that it really hurts you to have them say those things to you. Now, if it's somebody in school, you've got to tell somebody in charge. And if they don't listen to you the first, second, or third time, tell them again. Don't be afraid to speak up. One of the things in this movie I saw happening with some of these kids, it happened to so long, so repetitively that they began to think that it was normal and that maybe they did deserve it. Maybe that was their lot in life. Can you believe that? Maybe that was the only reason they're here. And that maybe those kids picking on them really like them. They're really friends of theirs. They're just, you know, they just don't know how to show affection in the right way. I've heard myself say those words. I've heard myself tell my daughter somebody likes her, a boy likes her, because little boys pick on you to get your attention. Well, let me tell you, if it's happening on a regular basis and doesn't stop, enough is enough. You have to speak up, you have to speak out, and you have to be heard. One of the other strange things that took me by surprise with the movie was the fact that one of the messages that came out was the young girl who took a gun to school. She got more attention than anybody else. I don't want anybody thinking that taking a gun to school is going to be the answer to anything. At some point in time, we're going to talk about guns, and we're going to talk about the finality of a gun. There's nothing that stops anything faster than a gun. But once it stops it, it's over with. It's gone forever. It doesn't stand back up and walk again. It doesn't start over again. It's finished. So guns are not the answer. Not the answer ever. So please, if anybody watches this movie and picks up on the fact that this girl got all the attention she ever wanted once she took a gun to school, that is not the answer, ever. So first talk, if that doesn't work, write something and send it to people. Whatever you can do that makes yourself heard. Now, there's something else I'd like to know from all of us. Are we bullies? Are you a bully? Am I a bully? Maybe we need to think about that. Maybe we need to consciously be aware of the things we say to other people. If you're in a situation where you are the boss someplace, are you bullying your associates? Are you treating them less than how they should be treated? I had someone say to me yesterday, I don't want to work anymore for this person because they talk to me like I'm not as good as they are. Boy, that hurt my feelings because I know both people. And I know the person that's doing this would be mortified if I told them that's the way this other person feels. And yet, the one who told me this seriously meant, absolutely, positively, doesn't want to help this person anymore or do anything for this person because they talk to them like they are beneath them. Are you doing that? Am I doing that? We need to consider how we're talking to other people as well as what we're hearing from other people. I don't think anybody starts out as a child thinking, I think I'll spend the rest of my life just picking on everybody. I think that's a ridiculous assumption, and I don't think that's true. Do I think that there are tendencies towards being a bully, being a crybaby, being this, being that? Yes, I do. I've talked about it many times, and I do believe that. But you don't intentionally want everybody to either fear you or not like you. We all want the same thing, each and every one of us. We want to love someone. We want someone to love us back. We want to respect people. We want people to respect us. Purely and simply, there is nothing else. Those are the most important things that you can get from each other, love and respect. So I want all of us to think this week about whether or not we're bullying anybody. I want us to take into consideration the fact that something that we think is our job or our right or our position, maybe we need to reanalyze that and think to ourselves, maybe that isn't the way I should be explaining this to so-and-so, or maybe this isn't the way I should be telling. Say it's your child. Maybe you're really angry with them because they've really been misbehaving. Choose your words wisely, because instead of fixing a situation, you could be compounding it out of sight. You could be making it so bad that you'll never be able to make it better. That's not what you want. I don't believe that's what anybody wants. So if you're bullying your children, your spouse, your best friend, because they're willing to take it from you for whatever reasons, stop it. This is another one of those times when you have to take a look at the man in the mirror, the only one you can never lie to. And maybe we should each make a promise to do that tonight. Look at the man in the mirror and say, are you really being everything that you need to be? Are you really being the person you want other people to be to you? And if all your answers are positive, God bless you. If they're not, which I don't think mine will be, maybe I need to pay more attention to that and less attention to how I can make all the people in my life be better people. First, make me a better person. Try harder and give more effort to making sure that I see both sides of an issue before I jump to any conclusions. The other thing that the movie taught me is that we need to move on with kids, and we need to do more one-on-ones whenever we get the opportunity. So I'm hoping, as I mentioned yesterday, that I will be given an opportunity to go into some of the schools and show the movie and discuss it. And I'm hoping that the producers of this movie are going to do some follow-ups with it, so that we get some more answers. Because now that it's dug up all of this information, now we really all are going to need help on what we're going to do with it, how we're going to make it work for us, how we're going to make it better. And again, I am open to any suggestions anyone has out there that they want to share that they think will make things better for our children and ourselves and our future. If you have some ideas on how things can be calmer, more peaceful, less hatred, less harm, share it. Share it anywhere they'll let you. And I'm giving you an invitation to call this talk show, Renee's Heart to Heart, whenever you think you have an idea, a suggestion, whatever you wake up with that tells you your idea will make things better, let's talk about it. Let's see what we can do to make this world a kinder place. Because the bullying and the unkindness is everywhere. It's not just in schools and it's not just with kids. It's everywhere. I'm going to bring in Shelley now. As you know, Shelley's been joining me every night, thank God. Otherwise, I would be sick of hearing myself talk. Hi, Shel. How are you tonight?
Oh, doing real good, Rena. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I had a great conversation today with somebody affiliated with this film, and we talked through a lot of things because, as you know from last night, I was pretty, I was really upset by the behavior of all the adults.
I know. I have a story real quick to add to that, and then I want you to finish what you were going to say. But I was talking to somebody at work today, and we were talking about the show, and she told me a story that she witnessed herself. This isn't something she saw on there. She was at the mall recently, and she saw this woman who was obviously quite frantic, and she was watching the woman to see where she was going because she looked like she was in distress and needed help, and she ran up to one of the mall security guards, and she's flailing her arms around and grabbing the sides of her head. So, I mean, you can tell that she's, like, frantic. And the woman who told me the story said instantly, she's like, oh, my goodness, this woman can't find her child. She could just tell by the type of franticness it was that this was something very personal. And she ended up walking away from the security guard. The security guard basically crossed his hands and didn't do anything. He just stood there, kind of like a mopey look on his face. Didn't seem to be concerned at all with what the woman was telling him. She said he almost had the demeanor of being bored by what she was saying to him. So this coworker of mine walked up to the lady and said, "Ma'am, what is going on? You seem to be so upset." And sure enough, she couldn't find her little daughter, 4 years old.
Oh, boy.
And my coworker said, "First of all, calm down. She's here in the mall. Everything is okay. We'll find her." And sure enough, within 10 minutes, they were able to retrace the tracks. The little girl had just gone off on her own. She was frantic, realized she couldn't find the mom anymore, and she got them reunited. So there's two stories here. Number one is that my friend and coworker stepped in and did what we all need to do. She was alert.
I lost you. Shelly must be going through one of those areas where her antenna goes down. Everybody, hang on, and she'll be right back with us. She usually calls right back in. But she's right, of course. This lady stepped up to the plate and did what we would want to hope everybody would do for us. And very sadly, because of the times of erratic behavior and lawsuits, a lot of people are afraid to. So,
right.
Shell, I kind of finished your sentence, but you're back on now.
Yeah, sorry about that. I went through that stupid, every night with that same light, my phone just dropped the ball. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you hear what I'm saying. So she stepped in and helped the woman, obviously, but the security guard, this is his job, and did absolutely nothing to help this woman to look for her child. People like the bus driver who didn't help the girl who didn't pull over and say, "Knock it off back there. I'm not driving anymore until everybody's in their seats and quiet." You know, it's like adults are taking on jobs, and then not taking on the responsibility that goes with that job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I see that in a lot of other areas too. These are just two examples, but if you know, when you take on a job or just being a human being, be alert. Be responsive, and like you said, care about each other. Simply care about each other.
Well, one of the things that always shocks me, I have to wonder sometimes if they've been given instructions to not react, or if they've been given instructions to, I don't know, to maybe radio somebody and not answer the question or do something like that. I mean, I'd hate to think that that's true, but it is a possibility that they've already been told to not get involved in some of these things. So you have to wonder if that's a part of what's going on. Now, I would think a security guard in any big mall or shopping center or anything like that would be in a place where, you know, they're ready, willing, and able to make sure that they do something to help if something like that is going on. But I'm no longer sure that that's true.
Right. Well, I've met security guards from time to time. I mean, I've talked to them, and some of them are in the job because they just want to help people. You know, and they couldn't become a police officer for this reason or that reason, and they just wanted to help people in that way, and they really enjoyed their job. And then I knew one guy that took it because it was the only job he could get. He was bored out of his mind. He hated the job. And it's like, you know, it's not appropriate. It's just not appropriate. If you're going to take on a job, take on the responsibility that goes with it, you know, and just do the best you can with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
Don't take on a job just to put in the time so you can collect a paycheck at the end of the week, because that's not fair on all the people that are depending on you. And every
well, especially
job
a job
has
like that.
Depending on you. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Of course.
Especially a position like that where people are look around and see a uniform and just instinctually feel like, oh, thank goodness, there's some help,
right.
And then don't
right.
get it. That's very discerning. I'm gonna invite in the new caller. Hello.
Hi, Renee.
Hi, dear. I thought this was Gary, but I wasn't sure.
Yes.
I'm going to have to really memorize everybody's phone numbers.
I'm just going to be in the background, like, listening and jump in when, you know, I can.
Okay.
Yeah,
that will be very helpful.
Can I say one thing, though, about, you know, the girl in the movie with the gun? I totally agree with what you said, and I feel, you know, kids need to know that the voice is more powerful than the gun. And using your voice and expressing yourself is the healthiest thing you could do for yourself. And there won't be any consequences for it either. You know, in the movie, the girl with the gun, there were serious consequences to
her reactions.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, your best tool is to use your voice. And,
well,
you know.
And I think we're in total agreement with that. And the fact of the matter is, like I said, a gun is like, it's final. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So it's not the answer, ever.
Right.
It's just not the answer. The answer comes with making things better, not making things over or worse. So please, I don't know how to stress that any more than say that. But I do know that kids think of guns as the answer because they realize of the strength they think that comes from holding a gun. They think that that makes them the powerful one in any kind of a confrontation when it really makes them the person with the biggest decision to make and the biggest responsibility. And I don't think you want to be there.
Right. And a lot of kids that use guns, you know, they say, you know, like, well, now you'll respect me. No, you're not getting respect from anybody because you have a gun in your hand. You're just instilling fear in people. And the minute you don't have that gun anymore, they're going to go right back to treating you the way they were before, because respect is something that you earn by acting with integrity and dignity, not by threatening people with mortal harm. So
that's
what people don't understand, is that a gun doesn't get you respect, it just gets you fear. And when the fear's not there, you're right back where you were. Well, when you get somebody to respect you because you're a good, decent person, that will last a lifetime. You'll instill loyalty in people.
Well, and the other thing, of course, that I wouldn't want to have to get into on a show like this, but if you talk to veterans who spent time in many of our wars and actually had to use their gun against people that they felt no real threat from, or situations where it was just a part of what they were told to do, they suffered those consequences the rest of their lives.
That's right.
So it's not something to be ever, ever, ever taken lightly. And I think many young people would do them good for them to hear some Vietnam vets, even some of your older World War II vets, who talk about it like it was awful for them and it's something that's never left them. So there's a lot of connotations that go along with any kind of act that's done with a gun. So hopefully the gun thing is a big conversation, and I hope to be able to touch on it at some point in time because of what's going on in our world today. But it's not something I want all the kids to be thinking about or have all their energy put into the rights and wrongs of a gun. I'd like them to first learn how to get along with each other and have enough respect for each other to do what's right for them in their own world without getting into the grown-up world, which is a little overwhelming for us grown-ups.
Right. Well, one of the things you had said about, you know, the man in the mirror and for each person to, I mean, the bottom line is if you want to change the world, it has to start with you. You can't change other people, but you can positively influence other people by your, like I said, your strength, your dignity, your integrity, your kindness. You can influence other people. You can get their attention and show them how to treat other people. I mean, when I first met you, I had gone through some stressors in my life, and although, you know, I'm always a loving person and a kind-hearted person, but I had anger issues, and I would flare very easily, and I was very impatient with people. And over the time working with you at Hippocrates, I watched you deal with extremely, extremely stressful situations with guests and with staff, and you always had such a sense of calm and kindness about you. And over the years that I worked with you, I ended up learning and taking some of that on. I watched you, it got my attention, it impressed me, and it actually started softening me, you know. And that's what people have to do. You have to pay attention to how people treat other people around you. And when you see someone treating somebody in a way that you don't like, then don't do it yourself. You can learn
that's
by
right.
watching other people. And when you see someone treating people the way you do like, then try to mimic them. Try to emulate them. Allow that to influence your behavior. And
mm-hmm.
each one of us, like you said, if each one of us strives to be the best we can, if each one of us strives to always better ourselves, then eventually things will improve all around us. I'm very, very hopeful, and I have a lot of confidence in us as a, you know, as a civilization, that we will eventually move in that direction. But it has to be a deliberate, conscious action that people want to better themselves and want to be role models for other people, and just, you know, just be alert.
Well, and the big point that you've just made, and that is the most important point to hear, is the fact that even though you flatter me with what you said about me, and I do appreciate it, and I love you for it, but the truth of the matter is, Shell, is you made those changes yourself. I didn't make them for you. You made them yourself, and that's the whole point. If we can see that things are done better, kinder, nicer by another way of doing it when somebody shows it to you and you adapt yourself to that, that's
right.
what makes things better. I can't say to you, now, Shelley, watch what I'm doing. I'm not teaching you the cha-cha. I'm trying to show you a way of saying something to somebody that calms them, doesn't hurt their feelings, and is kind to them. And that's what
right.
you learned. And you learned it without me saying, Shelley, do this. We didn't ever play Simon Says, did we?
No, of course
never.
Not.
Never. So all we have to hope for, and I do see it out there, I know it's there, because when somebody gets hurt, when there's something that is horrendous, like what happened to my Michael, all those people who stood up and said, hey, we're not going to take this crap anymore, and fought to get him into a better place and did not give up, nights of sleeplessness from people that never even laid eyes on him in their ever didn't know
right.
him from anybody. And yet
right.
they all stood up, and they were incredibly strong and incredibly forthright about what they believed in. So you know that it's in them. You know that it's in
right.
all of us.
Exactly.
We just have to know which nozzle to turn, I guess.
Renee, I think it's important to, like, if you know you're a bully or you know you have tendencies to do bullying behavior,
mm-hmm.
that every time you stop yourself and are able to change it,
mm-hmm.
you're going to improve. It's not going to, I mean, some people, it's not just going to, you're going to wake up and you're going to be perfect.
Absolutely.
You know? And, I mean, every time, you know, you start losing your patience, you're going to do something that you know you may regret later on. If you could just stop it, that will help you heal. It'll help you get better. And each time you do something to stop yourself, eventually it's going to get to the point where it does disappear, or it is out of your system. And
well, certainly,
you're gonna
retrain yourself. You're going to teach yourself the right way of doing something. That's absolutely true. But
don't beat yourself up over if you mess up. You know, and I think that's what holds a lot of people back. Oh, I messed up. I'm going to be like this, and I can't change anything.
That is an issue. I'll go along with that. It is an issue, and a lot of times if we fail at something too many times, we just say, oh, I can't do this, and we walk away from it. That is an issue. But the truth of the matter is that there isn't anything that's worth anything that's real easy to accomplish. Nothing.
Right.
And the quicker you understand that, and the more you realize that it is a game of repetition, and just next time I'll do it a little bit better, and next time I'll do it a little bit better, until you get to the point. Like I said last night, I don't know anybody that's perfect. Nobody. I would love to meet a perfect person. I don't think there is any such person. I think that we are all in a constant evolution to be more than what we are in this moment. So we're all in a course of training of some kind.
Right.
Each and every one of us.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we should be. And the people that are complacent and like, okay, I've arrived now, you know, like I'm as good as I'm ever going to get. And I've actually heard people say that. I am who I am, and this is as good as it's ever going to get. And at that moment, any hope of their life ever improving just went out the window. Because if you're not always looking to kind of like stretch yourself a little bit, expand your mind, learn something new, you know, it amazes me when people say they're bored when there's thousands of subjects out there. You know, pick up a book, go to the library, spark yourself. It enlivens you when you kind of stretch yourself a little bit and start learning new things. It makes life more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways that people can make themselves better, either learning something, you know, trying a new exercise, walking outside in the fresh air, looking up in the sky is one great way to uplift your spirits. It's weird because you're looking up, and that action actually does uplift you a little bit, you know. But there's simple little things that people can do just to keep improving themselves, but it has to be a conscious desire, and it has to be a conscious effort.
Well, and I think we all have a little bit of that, but, you know, the other thing that's really important is surrounding yourself with people that are positive, that love you, that support you, that realize that you are attempting to be a work in progress, and they you get respect from them and you get help from them. I see a lot of people that are amazing people, and then I meet their circle of friends, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, why are you even with these people? Because they are nothing like you. You know, and you can't say anything about the other people because that's not right either. But you wonder why this person that you've met on a different set of circumstances is like trying to fly, and everybody that he surrounds himself with are like sandbags.
Right. Exactly.
So that's another choice you have to make.
Exactly, and it is important to surround yourself with people that are like-minded, where, you know, if you have friends that every time you say something to them, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and it's something that you're passionate about, it's something that interests you, that's getting you excited, and they're like, oh, well, that's silly, and then they put you down for it, well, okay, that's kind of a clear indication that person is an anchor and not a friend. You need people who will get excited with you, whether it's something they want to do or not. If they're a friend of yours, they're going to be excited for you. And they're going to be, you know, they might say something like, hey, that's not really my cup of tea, but you sound excited about it. Let me know how it goes. That sounds, you know, and at least be supportive of you. That's a friend.
Yes. Well, see, that's another issue that I think is important to talk to kids in school is learning about friendship. And just like I talked tonight about knowing the difference between, you know, if somebody's a bully in your life, you know, if somebody's saying something to you all the time that continuously makes you feel bad or hurts your feelings,
right.
and you're striving to get that person to see something about you that's good, then something's wrong with that friendship or that relationship. And in their own way, that person is bullying you. So it's the same thing with friends. You know,
right.
Learning to surround yourself with happy, like-minded people is good for you. And the more people you can get to come into your circle of friends and be like that, the more people you're enlightening as well. Even though I still strictly believe that you can't change anybody, I do think environment is real important for good relationships and good friendships and good people. Environment has a lot to do with it. So if you provide an environment like that, you usually can get a really, really happy group of like-minded people together. And the more situations like that we have, you know, the bigger this just gets. And soon it will be the, you know, the way it's supposed to be and will be the norm instead of the not normal.
Right, right. It won't be the exception to the rule, it'll be the community.
Exactly.
It'll be the normal community going forward.
Exactly. Now, when I said last night, I mentioned the young girl, and that if nobody, after all the years of knowing her, ironically, this happened in the small town that my kids were born in, one of their best friends. By the time he was six, I knew he was gay. I never said anything to his mother. I never said anything to anybody. I just, you know, instinctively knew. And he grew up with all my kids, and my kids pretty much knew. Never did anything about it or said anything about it, but they knew. And then when he came out of the closet, there was this big thing, and his real father tried to pretend that he wasn't his father and all this stuff. And all my kids came to me and said, "What's the deal with that?" And I said, "The only thing I can say to you is that he has a small mind, and it's a shame because he should be loving his son. Do you still love this boy?" And all my kids said yes. And I said, "Well, then that's all we'll worry about." And that's all we did worry about. And he ended up leaving that small town and lives someplace else now. But the point is that he, you know, that was really tough those many years ago. Now
yeah.
It's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, and it's still about acceptance and knowing who somebody is. And like I said last night, if I were that young girl's parents and I realized that everybody was just closing their mind and not still loving her because of something that she had really no say in, I'd have left. I'd have just left. And I don't know whether that's even right. You know, I don't know that that's the right thing to do even, but that's what I would have done. And
if you can't take any action to educate the community, you know, if it's not something where you go and speak to the adults and kind of get everybody to be more accepting, then, yeah, I think the only choice you do have is to move. I mean, there shouldn't be anything that's more important than your children. You brought them into this world, they have to be your charge until they're emancipated and then they can take care of themselves. While they're under your charge, you have to do everything you can to help them to grow up safe and sound and happy and to have an attitude towards life that they can make it and that they're in charge of their lives and they can make good things happen to themselves. And when you allow your children to lose their power is when you have children growing up into adults, and then they always have problems, and they just can't seem to take their power back ever.
And
I feel like there has to be a point, too, instead of, because, I mean, if somebody just picks up and move, you don't know what you're getting into when you move. And so you,
that's true.
You know, you expose yourself to another environment that could be worse. And I think, I mean, part of it is, you know, like, say, the girl in the movie who is gay, maybe finding a community in that area or a group of people that could relate to what she's dealing with, and maybe sticking together, helping each other, supporting each other, and maybe taking action to do something to make that change at the place that you want to call home, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the community
mm-hmm.
that you belong to.
Well, the only thing that I would say differently from that is the fact that even if you go someplace else and it takes you a while to get people to know you and care about you, the real hurtful part for them was these people already loved her, or she already
right.
felt that they loved her. They already accepted her as a part of their community. And then they changed their minds after she came out of the closet. And that's what was hurtful.
Right.
That's what was so painful, because it's one thing to find out, I mean, you yourself know, if you run into somebody at a bar, you run into somebody at a bar and they you instantly don't really take to each other, you don't care. You just walk away.
Exactly.
But to be in a scenario, especially as a child, and realize that the people that let you have pajama parties at their house and you were best friends with their kids and everything, all of a sudden don't care about you over something, I mean, that'd be like not caring about a child because they had a terrible accident and now they have an awful scar on their face, so they're ugly, so now you can't be friends with them anymore. Isn't it the same thing?
Yep, exactly.
That's what hurt me about that. And that's the only reason I said to move. I'm not a runner awayer myself. I believe that you can always make everything better if you just, you know, face the music and dance to it. But I don't think that scenario was fair. And I have been in those situations, and maybe that's why I related to it so easily, because of the kid that I knew when he was young. So I don't know, but it seemed to me that if I had to go around, plus that, Gary, I'm not real good at reminding somebody why they care about me. See, that's a flaw in my personality. I'm one of those kind of people that I make sure that I go out of my way to be good to people and treat them the way I want them to treat me. So if somebody disrespects me or, you know, isn't loyal to me for one reason or another, somebody might say, you know, I think you need to, you know, go tell them what the scoop is. And I'm like, no, that's ridiculous. I am not telling them why they should care about me. So I have that flaw in my personality. I cannot do that. If you turn against me, or you decide that I'm not worth, you know, what you thought I was worth once upon a time, or whatever the case might be, in most cases, I'm done. I just would say, okay, bye. And that would be the end of it. So that's probably one of my major flaws. See, now you're learning way too much about me, Gary.
We're going to get it out of you.
But I mean, you know, and that's the most hurtful thing to me, to know that somebody, you know, loves you and trusts you and all this kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and say, oh, you just don't fit the bill anymore. See ya. Or you did this. Or I've had women come to me, they cut their hair, and their husband wants to divorce them.
Wow.
That's true.
No, I've heard of things like that. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
so there are just some things that are, you know, they sound ludicrous, but it's true. But we're talking about stuff that's supposed to form a stronger, a more complete, a more rooted civilization. A civilization where I know that if I'm standing beside you, it's worth it to me to stand beside you, Does that make sense?
Of course.
And that's what I'm looking for, and that's what I'm looking for to instill in the children in my life, in the friends in my life, everybody, that's the only way this world will really survive. It's not about anything but that. And to think it is, you're fooling yourself. It's not even about money. It's not about power. It's about who trusts who and who's going to be there at the end of the day. Because if everybody turns around and runs and you're standing there all by yourself, you're going to lose.
That's right. Well, you know, bottom line is that, you know, there's so many different moving parts to the message that you're conveying to everybody. But the two of the major points are that, number one, adults have to start being more responsible and more consciously kind. Just putting their thoughts there to be consciously kind and gracious and patient and, you know, just get themselves in a better place. And at the same time, kids have to be provided a forum to, like you said, to unload before they discharge. The kids who are the bullies, you know, people need to understand, and I had said this in a previous show, and I still stand by it, kids that bully are damaged. A child is not going to bully another child. An adult is not going to bully another person unless there is something integrally wrong with them, unless they're unhappy, they're stressed, they're fearful, there's something going on with them that they're turning on the people that they feel they can, because something is happening over here that's got them in a place they're not okay with. And they're just taking it out on the wrong people, unfortunately. Okay? So if you understand that, the bullies need just as much help as the people that they are bullying, you know? So it's both sides of the coin. The people that are fearful that are being bullied need to have a forum, need to have somebody to go to that they can listen to, whether it's a friend, whether it's an organization, whether it's a teacher, a police officer, somebody, there has to be a set place for them to go to be able to get help. And the bullies need to get help also.
Well, I have always believed in my heart that the worst bully that I've ever met, I'm sure, was being bullied 10 times harder than what he was dishing out, and you're never sure where it came from or even if it's still continuing, but rule of thumb usually tells you that there's unkindnesses being done to somebody who finds it necessary to go around and bully other people. That's for sure. I don't know whether I believe that they've actually been bullied, like being picked on, but in some way, shape, or form, they've been abused.
Exactly.
They've not been treated the way they should have been treated. So, and bullying and being mean is just their frustrations coming out because they don't know what else to do with them.
Right.
And, you know, it's a funny thing when Mike first got out of the hospital and we were struggling with the night terrors and the anger that he would well up every now and then, I bought the trampoline. And the trampoline was like magic for all of the grandchildren. I would watch, and if there was a dissertation about who was supposed to play the video game next, or who played it more often, or whose game was in the video game, and it's not your game, it's my game, so if I'm going to play it, you can't, you know, one of those kind of deals with teenagers. And I'd look outside, and there'd be one of the kids bouncing for all they were worth on the trampoline. And I said to Big Spike, I said, look, that's how they're getting rid of all their frustrations. They're going out there and jumping on that trampoline. And, of course, I tried to get him to go do it. He wouldn't do it. But But, I mean, it helped. And, you know, that was one of the things that in the very beginning, that when I started talking to the schools, I said, what happened to physical education?
Right.
And everybody said to me, well, you know, you got to do that. And I said, wait a minute. I said, so don't have some big expensive physical education teacher. You know that my granddaughter has a weight class. You know what she does during weight class? She plays on her phone because she doesn't lift weights.
Oh, for God's sake.
And Austin started a weightlifting class, and his teacher was doing it just to give the kids something to do. And then something happened at home, a personal thing, and he had to stop doing it. So he's not coming anymore. But they even with like AJ and Emily in elementary school, there's no run outside and get rid of some of that energy and then come in and focus.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, you know, that's another thing that I'm hoping if I get the opportunity to talk to some of these principals and everything, that they'll, of course, they're going to tell me that their hands are tied because of money and politics and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, my mic was so hyper as a child. It's a family joke today because now he's very laid back and very calm. But he was my hyper child. And he'd be, like, bouncing off the walls, and I'd be trying to get dinner done and everything, and I'd say, I'd look at the kitchen clock, and I'd say, okay, you got 3 minutes to run all the way to Grandma's and back. I'm timing you. And he would do that and come back, you know, settled down.
Right.
So, but the trampoline helped a lot in the beginning for Mikey and, like I said, for the other kids. So that's another thing that I would like to see happen for some of these kids, because their frustrations are much greater than everybody understands. I think because they're kids, they don't have to worry about the electric bill and the mortgage, so whatever they're worried about is nothing.
Well, they used to have these youth centers. A lot of them have closed down, but there used to be evening youth centers where they'd have basketball courts or music playing and, you know, where kids could go to hang out for a couple of hours after school, like you said, to let off steam and stuff. And so many of them didn't survive. These are the type of things that communities should get together, and if the government's not going to provide it, then the community should. And it's like when you think of people going to Starbucks, and I know this is true because I do it myself sometimes. You know, there are people who go to Starbucks every day and spend $5 on a cup of coffee, and they do that every day of the month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, chip it. If everybody just chips in a buck or two in a particular community, get these community centers back up so the kids have some place to go.
I want to make sure that if anybody in the Acreage is listening, the Acreage does have some of those things. The Acreage has Community Park, which is amazing, and my two teenagers, except for the last couple nights because of all the rain, are there almost every night after school, and they play football for anywhere from 2 to 3 hours every night.
Fantastic.
And it's a lit-up place, and they've got a ramp for skateboarding and stuff like that. Now, is it monitored, and are there adults there to keep an eye on everything? No. But I've been there several times. I've never seen anything that makes me worry. And because of all the lights and everything, I know it's pretty secure. And as a rule, one of us take them and pick them up. But there is that available, and I do think that that's wonderful. But it's still discerning that that's not available in a school, you know, in the classroom and affiliated with the school. So that is something that I think we do need to work on and see if we can open some doors to that again. And hopefully it's not just about money.
Well,
you know.
I mean, it is shocking because that was a big deal. I remember when I was in school, the after-school programs that were in the school building were, like, essential. I mean, they were always packed. They always had a full house. You know, kids would hang out, they would do this, they would do that. You know, one room they had music in, one room they had, and then they're not even really doing music in school anymore. You know, so it's like all the cultural stuff, which is imperative to having kids grow up with kind of like a well-rounded understanding of the diversity of life, and it's like they've sucked it out of the schools. You know, the things that really would, you know, get a kid's attention and let them know that there's something more than just reading books and getting a job when they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they took the culture out of school.
Well, I think I mentioned early on about the petition that I signed about the young girl, the young gay girl that wanted to have the after-school activity because it embraced their lifestyle and was supporting all of them and everything. And I think I even said to Gary, this is outrageous if they take that away from them. Outrageous.
Right.
I mean, what can it be costing them, and how can it be hurting them? And
right.
And yet, you know, it was posted, and yes, they were going to have a big meeting and do away with it. So I think that's just awful, and doesn't even make sense to me, first of all. So I haven't heard anything yet. There was supposed to be a meeting this week, so I will have to follow up on that and find out what happened with that.
You either are or you aren't gay. It's not like it's going to rub off. It's not like if your kid hangs out with somebody gay that they're going to become gay. And you know what? If they do admit they were already, it just means that now they have a comfort level to kind of voice it to you. But it's like people have such a ludicrous attitude towards it. And it's like, and like I was saying, they've proven genetically that it's not a choice. It is, in fact, who these people are. Just like having brown eyes or being 6'2", it's a characteristic of that particular person. It's not their choice. And think about it: would somebody choose to be gay with a lot of the ridicule that goes with it? You know, it's ridiculous. You wouldn't choose to put yourself in that lifetime. It's just that, you know, people are getting more comfortable now with saying that this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. Thank God. Well, and on that note, I think that like I said before, if we can get an opportunity to get into some of the schools and talk about some of these things, and the young people that I met a few years ago that were opening the eyes of their schoolmates to their cultures and all the other things that was going on with them. Me too. And I fell asleep last night thinking about all of them and thinking to myself, what an awesome idea for like a really big open forum, a place that was almost like a festival like that, you know, where you could walk up and talk to people about anything that has to do with their culture and have it explained to you. I can't imagine anything that would be more fulfilling than to understand everything, because it's all so different, so variable and so different, and some of it is so incredibly beautiful. I was always so impressed by Orthodox Jews because they are so dedicated and loyal to what they believe in that they just, you know, especially some of the older ones that I've met in my lifetime in the hospitality industry, I'd be like, I remember one old lady said to me, "Oh, you probably get so sick and tired, you know we're coming and you want to hide." And I said, "No." I said, you're so amazing for me. And she got all teary-eyed. And she and her husband were two of the people that gave some of the information for Schindler's List.
Oh, wow.
So those kind of people for me are like just full of life and what makes the world go round and what's even stopped it a couple times. And who would not want to know more about them? I mean, you'd have to be crazy to not want to hear some of the things that they could share with you and some of the things that they could teach you. It would be awesome.
Well, one of the things that I find...
Go ahead, honey.
Real quick. One of the things that I find when I learn about other cultures and other people is, number one, it's interesting. It's kind of exciting to hear about other cultures. But simultaneously, it's making the world smaller, because you realize that even with all the cultural differences, like I said last night, everybody really is the same. They all they might culturally go after it differently, but they're going for the same thing, which is love, affection, safety for their loved ones. Everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah, I agree, 100%, 100%. Okay, well, we're at the countdown. I want to thank both of you, and this was a great talk tonight, and I think I have some more ideas about what we can do and some of the things that we can say to the right people and see if we can make some more changes. So I love you both, and thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Mm-hmm. Good night.